Evening, lords and lasses. Welcome to the Maniacal Books Tavern, where this week we're going to do all things fantasy, such as magical creatures and elves and dwarfs and all things in the magical. Okay, I'm done. Okay, so this is Alex Mack. Thank you for checking out Maniacal Books Weekly. I'm sorry, I don't know what came over me. I was in the spirit. I was in the fantasy spirit. I'm doing fantasy this week. I had to get in the spirit. But okay, on with the show. Let's go. All right, when you hear the tunes, you know what time it is. And when you hear the chair creak too. I hate this chair. I hate this chair. I kind of hate my whole setup. But anyway, yes, it is another Monday night. It's another time for Maniacal Books Weekly. Yeah, let's get it going. This should be a fun one. You know, I've been keeping the show kind of theme heavy. And, you know, the first 2 weeks were pretty horror related. And so last week we kind of, you know, we went digital. We went sci-fi. We went cyberpunk. And that whole thing. And so this week we're going for the trifecta. And we're going to do some fantasy. And I got a couple of really good selections to go through. Including one that is an absolute childhood favorite. So, yeah, let's get into it. Again, my name is Alex Mack. I am the proprietor of Maniacal Books. Yeah, let's have some fun. Let's kill an hour or so. You know? And, you know, you can catch us on everywhere, pretty much. You can, you know, listen to podcasts, you know, download podcasts on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Audible, Amazon Music, Radio Republic. I'm sure I left something out, but I mean, you get the idea. You get the general gist of it. So, yeah, all right, yeah, let's get to it, because we got N.K. Jemisin. 100,000 Kingdoms review, as well as The Legend of Vox Machina. God, I hope I said that right. Got that review. As well as Willow, the original 1988 movie, which is one of my absolute favorites, going all the way back to my childhood. And so, all right, let's go. Yeah, let's see what. So, you know how we always do this. We're just going to kick it off with what happened during the week? I don't know. What happened during the week? It was, the week was pretty uneventful, right? Nothing happened. Nothing crazy happened this week. No. It's just, I think, you know, we have the younger generation. As far as like hip hop goes and hip hop fans, the younger generation trashing the older generation, you know, trashing, you know, where they came from, the people that started it all. That's no different. That's pretty commonplace, you know, among us, the African American population. Yeah, it's really sad. DJ Academics. I know if you listen to this, you probably don't know who that is, but he's not necessarily a YouTuber, but he's like a young or hip hop personality on the internet. He likes to stream and do all that stuff. And, you know, he's pretty young, so he's into all the good hip stuff that's going on in hip hop, all the, like, the 25 and under stuff that's happening out there. Yeah. He just straight up said all the OGs in the game, they just dusty. Just call them dusty. But I'm not, like, when I heard it, I wasn't surprised. I didn't get angry. I just kind of shrugged and said, yeah, that's pretty typical. That's pretty typical. Like, and you never get that. So rock and roll, all the young up and comers that's still playing rock and roll. Like, I mean, hey, thank God for them. They're still at it. They still play music, but you never really hear them on a, like a wide platform, you know, just dumping all over, like, you know, the Rolling Stones or AC/DC or Aerosmith or you know, Blondie or anything like that. You know, generally it's just like, yeah, I grew up on them. They're kind of the reason I'm here. You know, it's kind of what got me into doing what I do for a living. It's the same with country. The same thing with country. Same thing with, like, you know, just name a genre. And for the most part, like, most of the young people who are, you know, doing it now or are still coming up will be like, yeah, listen to them. Well, yeah, my parents listened to them, and it totally got me into it. But not for hip-hop. Nah, because, you know, because we are... I think I can say this out loud on the internet, because I think everybody else knows, honestly. Like, there's no reason trying to, like, paint a prettier picture than what it really is. You know, it's just we as black people, we don't respect each other. Like, we have no respect for each other. We have no respect for, like, the elders, no respect for, like, you know, back in the day, the founding fathers, you know, the people who paved the way for us. Don't care. We young, we hot, we popping. Don't care what you say. I mean, it's sad, but it's just the truth. It's the truth. It's sad. Yeah, I mean, this, who, I don't, like, God, I don't even know who, a young rock and roll band would be nowadays. But I can tell you what, like, you know, Green Day never, like, Billy Joel never did an interview when he was saying, like, yeah, Sex Pistols, they're trash, they're dusty. You know what I mean? Oh, the Ramones, get out of here. Those losers. Nah. It's just us. It's just us. We have no respect for each other. It's sad. Oh, God, it's sad, but it is what it is, bro. Cause I wanna hear I don't listen to country, but I don't know, like, Kenny Chesney or something. You know, just rail on about, I don't know, some older, like, Johnny Cash. Yeah, I want to hear. You don't hear that, though. You do not hear that. It's generally, it's with respect, it's with reverence, and with acknowledgement that, you know, they walked so we can run, basically. Even if they have, like, some, like, tiff or something, like, that only they know about, like, I don't know, somebody slept with somebody's groupie or ex-girlfriend or something like that, you know. It would be totally behind the scenes. And in public, they'd be like, yeah, no, yeah. I listen to this stuff. He's a great guy, you know. Yeah, no, definitely. They're a pioneer. Just grew up on them. Hip-hop? Nah. Oh, smack what? MC Cool Herc? Bama Dusty. What's it? Fab Freddy. Bama's out of here. Nobody care about him. It's just us. It's how we are. It's totally how we are. And it's like everybody's kind of woke up to the fact, or woke up. I think everybody kind of knew already. Black people don't generally respect each other. That's why they can get us to turn on each other, like drop of a hat, if you noticed. Yeah, that was that. What else? I don't know. What else happened? There's a certain head coach that's under some fire right now. A certain head coach in Boston. And okay, look, this He messed it up so bad. It's we as men have to we got to take a hit. Like we seriously got to take a hit for that. I mean, how do you a you cheat on Nia Long? I got to marinate in that, you know. But hey, Jay-Z cheated on Beyonce, so and that old parable kind of rings true, you know. One man's princess is another man's pain in the ass. You know, it's just you could have Beyonce meets Megan Good meets Sofia Vergara, like a combination of all three of those absolute dimes. And yeah, there'd be some guy like, yeah, God, pain in the ass. Yeah, I don't care. But I mean, even still, we as men got to take a hit, because the way he did it, though, like it was almost vindictive, though. Like, good Lord. Like, apparently the person who had the relationship with, she even scheduled to move like his situation, you know, his family situation, even though they weren't married or whatever. That's another black thing too, by the way. Be together for like 20 years and, you know. Yeah, I guess we'll do it. Yeah, come on. Come on, woman. Sad or not. I guess. You ain't going nowhere, I guess. So, yeah, let's do it. But, yeah, no, it's... God, it's... That's just... Yeah, we gotta take a hit. As a collective. And he knew about it. He knew that it was going to be exposed like back earlier in the summer. And he still let Nia Long like move down to Boston. It's just. I mean, I can only shake my head, but I'm not going to sit here and like with my nose in the air and act like I do better. I don't know. You never know until you're in a situation. I think I would. Honestly, but I don't know. But God, if I was ever in a situation where like, oh yeah, Nia Long, oh God, her again. Oh my God, I don't know. I'm so poor and just broke down. I can't even imagine it. Like I'm here. I'm playing hurt this week, Coach. I'm playing hurt. I don't know, either sprained my wrist or, I don't know, maybe it's carpal tunnel. I don't know. It's just as sore as a mug. I had to order one of those wrist braces from Amazon today. It's been like that for a couple of days. I'm broke down. I'm just broken down. But yeah, that was that. It's just bad. It's all kind of speculation too. The thing is, now, this... There is an investigation going on, apparently, and Ime Udoka's name is being dragged all out there. But for some reason, the woman's name is nowhere to be found. Only Udoka is getting reprimanded or punished for this. But the thing is, they keep saying a consensual situation, a consensual relationship. And it's like, so why is only Udoka getting, like, his name drug out there? Which, if you're just putting the tea leaves together, he had a thing going with some president or I don't know, his wife or something like that. You know, because she is totally protected. She is protected. Like, they even throwing, other people have been thrown out there, you know, in order to protect her. It's just, it takes two to tango, people. Like, yeah, Udoka is, God, like, dude, he's just a trash human being. Like, there's some people, I hate that. God, I hate that. Like, come on, man. Look, I am very unattractive. I am pudgy. I am broke. I have, I have no no advantages in life, pretty much whatsoever. And you get this guy. I mean, he's tall. He's good looking. He can play ball. Has a baby by Nia Long. And still, he throws it away. I don't get it. But still, it takes two to tango, though. Like, yeah, why is only his name being thrown out there? I don't know. The whole thing is just... it's annoyingly funny. And I'm into it. Like, I'm just trying to find out, who is it? Who was it? Who is she? Who's the mystery woman? Honestly, I just want to see if she's white. I will put money on this, some, like, mildly attractive white chick. That's what I'm going with. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Nothing here than that. No, there. Because, oh yeah, by the way, Brett Favre is stealing welfare money from poor people in Mississippi. But nobody wants to talk about that. We didn't brush right past that. We're just going to talk about Adoka. But yo, Brett Favre? Yeah, no. Yeah, he's straight up stealing from the poorest. One of the richest people in the country, stealing from the poorest. We're not going to talk about that, though. We're going to sweep that right under the rug. Just sweep that up. Nope, clean it up. We're good. We're not even going to touch that. I think we talked about it for like 3 days, and then nope. Okay, we need something else. Udoka. There you go. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, I mean, it's not that hard to believe. Brett Favre is a kind of an unapologetic MAGA person. So you know how you feel about, I'm pretty sure, black people. Like, he's a rich, entitled white male from Mississippi. I mean, and he voted for Trump. Say no more. Yeah, I mean, we kind of know. He ain't got to say it. It's, we know. So, stealing from the poorest people in Mississippi, which, I mean, a good deal of them most likely are African-American. Yeah, he knew it was dirty and did it anyway. But, and I kind of agree with Shannon Sharp. Ain't nothing really going to happen to him. I'd be shocked. I'd genuinely be shocked if he gets, like, some jail time or something like that. Let's be honest, this is what we do here. You know, the rich and entitled get away with everything, and they find ways to break the rules or like skirt the rules. But come on, we all know what the deal is. Oh yeah, and on top of that, the owner of the Suns, what's his name, Robert Sarver, yeah, he has to sell the team. Apparently, he's a racist, sexist douche, and has been so for decades. But now, all of a sudden, you know, he has to sell the team. You know, everyone's giving him the stern looks and wagging the finger at him. So, you know, he has to go, okay. All right, I guess. I made a boo-boo. Yeah, this whole country's a sham. But hey, let's get right back onto it. I can start off with my Commanders. The Commanders, hey. Little Timmy and them got their ass kicked. Yeah, this team looked bad once again. They just look unprepared. You know, and it's primarily the offense. The offense just was bad. Carson Wentz got sacked 9 times, I believe, in the first quarter, in the first half. All in the first half. Again, it's kind of the same thing with the Detroit game. Man, they just do not look like a prepared team coming out there. And they have to kind of readjust at halftime. You know, they come out and just look like a competent NFL team. But, yeah, and especially against Jalen Hurts. Like, the Eagles can score. They can put up numbers. They are 3-0 at this point. And Hurts had 340 yards, 3 touchdowns. Like, yeah, he is going to be a pain in the neck for, like, the entire league, but really the NFC East for the next years to come, because he is too good, and he's just getting started, too. My Lord. Eagles won 24-8. My Commanders 1-2. Eagles are 3-0. Speaking of the East, so yeah, it's Monday night, so I just saw the G-Men, the New York Giants, lose against the Cowgirls. And man, it was really good to see Zeke have that big yard, have that big run. Because even I can say I'm not a Cowboys fan, but I was a fan of Dak and Zeke when they came into the league. Yeah, most definitely. I was a fan of theirs, and Dak is he is serviceable when he's healthy. But you know what? No, I'm gonna say he was hurt. I think he was hurt. Pretty much that whole Bucks game, because. Yeah, he looked really bad. And old Cooper Rush, you know, he's doing his thing. I know old Jerry, he's actually calling for a quarterback controversy. He'd never liked Dak. I think it's pretty clean, pretty clear he never liked Dak. But Dallas won 23-16. It was a good, it reminded me of like a good old school NFC East like battle. You know, it was a really low scoring game. It was a lot of defense. You know, old Dougie Dimes, he was running for his life like the entire game. I was talking about Carson Wentz getting sacked like 9 times. How many times did Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes? It seemed like every play he was running for his life back there. So, yeah, let's see. Old Cooper Rush, 215 with 1 touchdown, no picks. He looked pretty solid though. He's a solid like backup. Yep, and my man Zeke had 73 yards, 15 carries, and a touchdown. Yeah, that was I really loved that that touchdown run he had. It was shades of old 2016 Zeke. I think it was 2016, 2017. Sometime then. And yeah, there's a lot of talk about Michael Parsons. Like, there was a lot of talk about him. And he's a baller. Dude is a baller. They're calling him LT already. I mean, whoa, on that. You know what I'm saying? He had like one tack. Did he have any tack? I don't think he had any sacks today. Yeah, no, yeah. Didn't have no tackles for losses, no sacks. But he was causing havoc. Him and DeMarcus Lawrence, who is a beast. DeMarcus Lawrence had a game. He had three sacks, 3 tackles for loss. Yeah. Yeah, DeMarcus Lawrence is a problem. And Saquon looked good too. Like, yeah, I really liked Saquon looked good. And I'm not a Giants fan at all. I am not a fan of the G-Men, but yeah, it was good to see him out there and, you know, running pretty good. I don't think he had did he have a touchdown today? Yeah, he did. He had a touchdown. Oh, 81 yards and 14 carries and a touchdown. Yeah, he did. How'd I forget that? No, he did have a touchdown. It was like a good, like a 16-yard run for a touchdown. That was really good to see. So, yeah, that was Monday night. That was pretty cool. What was the other good one? Wait, who was our Sunday night game? Did I watch Sunday night? I think I did. Yeah, it was San Fran and Denver. That was a good defensive battle. I think I tapped out. I think I tapped out after a while. But yeah, it was pretty good defensive battle. You know, I had Jimmy G, you know, reclaiming his spot. You know, coming back out there, slinging old pigskin for the Niners. And a decent game, 211 yards, one touchdown, one pick, 18 for 29. Yeah, that was pretty good. Debo. Debo was like, man, if you're talking about a Swiss Army knife for a football player, that dude does everything. He had a pretty decent game. I think he had a touchdown. We had five catches, 73 yards. Yep, that's good. Kittle had four catches for 28. And I got my boy, old Kyle Juszczyk. Used to play for the Ravens for years. He only had one touch, 24 yards. Who scored the touchdown? Somebody scored a touchdown. Brandon Ayuk? Okay. Don't even know who that guy is, but. Yeah, I don't know what is going on with the Broncos, though. What is going on? Russell Wilson, he just doesn't look comfortable, you know? God, he had, only had 184 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, you know, 20 for 33. Yeah, the offense just looks lifeless. And even on the other, primetime game they had, like the opener. Against Seattle. Yeah, offense they just look hitchy. Just could not move the ball like at all. And Melvin Gordon had the only touchdown that game. Like, yeah, 26 yards and 12 carries. But yeah, it was going back and forth. But I don't know, it was just I tapped out. I think I started playing 2K. Like, yeah, okay, I've seen enough. Yeah, and we had the Clash of the Legends, actually. Clash of the Titans. We had Titans. Well, not the Tennessee Titans, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers going down to Tampa to see old Goat Brady and the Bucks. And, yeah, I could have called that. Tampa Bay lost. They don't really have any receivers. The one excellent receiver they had got suspended from fighting against the Saints. And so, yeah, old Goat Brady, I only had to make it up as he go. But even still, the one thing, like, I have conceded and said, yeah, nah, no, Tom Brady is definitely the GOAT. He almost came back again. he almost came back again. They just couldn't. If they got the 2-point conversion, it probably would have been a different story. He came back under a minute left in the fourth quarter. Here come old Tom Brady, old TB12. There you go. Marched right down the field, threw a touchdown, and they just needed and brought him back up to within one, 14-13. If they'd have kicked a field goal, it'd have been 14-13. But they needed 2 points to tie it. And just couldn't convert the 2 points. But, man, you know, you cannot, like, the guy is 45. 45 years old. Ugh. Yeah, that's the GOAT. Old Goat Brady. Had a 271. With one touchdown, which is kind of pedestrian for Tom Brady, though. Like, that's a really good game for any other quarterback. But for Tom Brady, it's like, I kind of expect, like, you know, 320, 335, like three touchdowns, no picks, something like that. But no, they fell to the Packers. Old Peyote Rodgers. No, was it ayahuasca or whatever he likes to drink out there in the desert and trip out? You know, yeah, no, he was good. He 255, two touchdowns and a pick. Yeah, had old Randall Cobb still holding it down out in Green Bay. He only had two catches for 57, though. But, yeah, no, that was a surprise. I'm saying it's a surprise. It's not really, because, you know, that they have injuries on the O-line, the Bucs do, and, you know, Mike Evans was suspended. That was probably, like, the missing piece, you know, to get them over the hump. But, yeah, those were kind of, like, the games. Was there another good one? Kirk Cousins led the Vikings over the Lions. Well, the Lions look all right this year. They actually look pretty good. Jared Goff with a 277 with a touchdown and a pick. But they look pretty good. They can put up some numbers, though. But, yeah, old Kirk Cousins. Old Kenfolk Cousins. Had a decent one. 260, two touchdowns, no picks. 24 out of 41 attempts. Dalvin Cook went off with 96 yards, 17 catches with a touchdown. Yeah, it's a decent game. But, okay, I think that's enough of that. So, I am going to run a quick ad. And when I get back, we are going to get into our reviews. And I will see you on the other side of the break.
Travel with me to a dark and isolated farm located deep in the heart of St. Mary's County, Maryland, where the only African-American farmer and his family are being tormented by some thing stalking around their property. Can they survive? Can they protect the farm that is their very livelihood? And can they do it with their sanity intact? Are you in the mood for dark, isolated, rural horror? Are books full of ghastly green goo and reanimated corpses your jam? Then check out Mulch, the eerie inaugural novella from Maniacal Books, available today on Amazon Kindle and mcsbooks.com.
All right, and I am back. And so we are going to start off everything with the fantasy novel pick that I have this week, which is kind of a pleasant surprise for me. I came in contact with this. I was looking for, you know, black authors, you know, fantasy authors that I can get into. And this was kind of at the top of the list. And I've been looking out for her work, like, ever since I read this. I read this back in, like, 2016, actually, too. So a lot of this I'm trying to, like, go from memory. You know, I had to kind of research this a bit, too, because it has been a while. And a lot of things have happened since 2016. But I think I'm ready to dive into this one here. The 100,000 Kingdoms by N.K. Jemisin was published back in 2010. Wow, way back in 2010 by Orbit Books. This is the first book of the Inheritance Trilogy, which I haven't read. I've only read this one so far, but I definitely want to get into the other two novels, you know, to kind of round it out. I haven't read this since 2016, so yeah, I'm probably going to have to re-go through this again just to kind of like refresh and, you know, get immersed into the series, and then I'll, you know, check it out. All right, so what is the 1,000 Kingdoms about? So this is starting with a young woman named Yaina. I had to go to the audiobook to just really find out how to say this, because I think it's Yaina. Right. So, yeah. So her name is Yaina. I had to go to Audible just to, like, double check and see. That's okay. That's how you say it. Okay. Yaina. All right. Her full name is, now get this. It's Yaina Dao Shi Kinet Tai Wer Samim Jana Dare. Yeah. That's her full name. That's crazy. Just to give you a taste of, like, N.K. Jemisin's kind of writing style and her imagination, it's she kind of operates on a different level than a lot of people. And like you can tell in her writing too that, yeah, this world is very kind of expansive. And if you're into that sort of thing, or if you're into this world and these characters, it's going to help you out when you're going through it. Yeah, so about Yaena. So she is part of the Dare tribe, or people, I guess you can say. And so her mother just mysteriously kind of dies. And so she kind of finds out, like, through the death of her mother. So she might have a direct connection with the emperor of, like, the most powerful kingdom or people in this world. Suddenly an invitation comes and she's, like, whisked off to the most powerful or popular city in here, which is a place called Sky, which is like supposedly it sits high above the clouds or something like that. Like, yeah, she writes it in a way that I actually love, where it's just so fantastical and kind of like out there and imaginative that it really did kind of pull me in. That's kind of like my favorite aspects of it. So yeah, she's in the city of Sky and she has to navigate through this really kind of Game of Thrones level of, like, you know, intrigue and dignitaries and, you know, plots for the throne and things of that nature, which I wasn't expecting it to be kind of like that deep into it. But yeah, it starts that whole kind of thing and it gets really interesting at that point. So, okay, a little bit more of the backstory on Yaena. So she has been ostracized from the kingdom because her mom fell in love with her mom, who's an Amari. That's the people, the Amari people are the ruling class, I guess you could say. And so her mom, like, fell in love with a Dare person who's, like, I guess they're more like the common people or the common tribe or whatever. Her mom's people, the Amari people, kind of looked down on that. And so, like just abdicated herself from the throne. And so she has no connection with the Amari people or the people, the ruling class family that she has. You know, her being or going to that the Amari people and that kingdom is kind of like she's like our window, the audience's window into that world and that whole setting, because she has no contact with them. And so she has no idea what's going on or who they are or what, like, all the machinations or whatever that's goes on day to day in that city. And so that kind of helps make it, like, a very intriguing too. Okay, so what I like about this, again, it's a very kind of Game of Thrones-esque kind of you know, plot that's going on here. When she gets to the city, it's a lot of people, like, vying and making, like, political moves and stuff, you know, for the throne or to get closer to the throne. And since Yaena seemingly has, like, a direct connection to the emperor or, you know, the ruling family there, you know, it pulls her, she's inadvertently pulled into a lot of, like, plots and schemes, and so she has to kind of, like, watch her back and watch her associations and things like that. The second thing I really kind of dig about it is having this kind of high fantasy plot being written and told through, you know, so a different point of view. You know, these kind of stories are typically kind of told from, like, a male perspective or a male point of view. And having, you know, N.K. Jemisin kind of write this from a completely different perspective on things was pretty cool. Like, I really like that aspect of it. With that being said, though, it is half chick lit. So if you're not into that kind of thing, I would still say give it a chance, because I gave it a chance. And, you know, the chick lit aspect of it was okay. It wasn't, like, the worst thing. It actually helped me kind of get into this a little bit more. And, so with the kind of, like, chick lit aspect to it, there are deities in here. They're like gods that have been enslaved under, like, the Aramari people. God, blah. But yeah, so they've been enslaved under the Aramari people, and they have, so they're at the bidding of those people. And since Yaena is part Aramari, so she kind of has, like, a claim to that aspect of it too. So there, of course, so one of the enslaved gods is, like, this super sexy, super mysterious, super tall, dark, and mysterious guy named Nahato. Nahato? Is that his name? Nahato or something like that. I forgot to write it down, but actually, I'm going to do one better. I'm going to read an excerpt from this, from the book. Yeah, so I'm going to read an excerpt of the book just as like a little taste of like how N.K. Jemisin is writing this. No, just to see just a little bit of the edge that she's adding to the story. Then I kissed him and filled that kiss with all the promise I could muster. But some of that surprise that passed between us was mine, for his mouth was soft despite its hard lines. Underneath that, I could taste hot spices and warm ocean breezes. He made my mouth water and my whole body ache. For the first time, I understood why Nahado, that's his name, loved him. And by the way his mouth hung open when I pulled back, I think he felt the same. Spicy. Ah, oh, it was just spicy. Yeah, and I almost forgot. On top of that, I remember reading this. There was another kind of love scene in here, you know, because this is a family channel, so I'm gonna try to keep it as PG as possible, you know. But there was another love scene in this where she was, you know, making love to one of those deities, part of the same deity I was reading the excerpt from, and she had this wild line here, like you say, oh. He filled me completely in a way that I'd never been filled before. Something crazy like that. And I was just like, oh, okay. All right. So this is what y'all be reading, huh? this the kind of stuff y'all females be reading. All right. Okay. I can't compete with that. Like, I'm you got it, bro. Shoot. Yeah. So, yeah. And this, it kind of helped open my eyes. This was one of the first books that kind of helped me, you know, break out of like my tiny little like genre books box that I was in for years, like for decades. And I started actively looking for, you know, other books by like female authors or just from, you know, just authors I wouldn't typically like go to read. And yeah, it's same with this book. I've been pleasantly surprised with a couple of other ones that I've picked up and started reading. And I'll probably do a review on some of those as well. But yeah, it was pretty good. This was the book that I kind of picked up and started reading, and I was just like, okay, yeah, I definitely am going to check out other like female fantasy books, or you know, books from like you know, other kind of female or just other authors from genres that I definitely would not have like picked before. Okay, so what I don't like about the book, or just what I just didn't jive with in the book. I mean, it kind of meanders a bit here and there. Kind of feel like a jerk for like saying that, because with a lot of fantasy, like with a lot of like high fantasy too, you kind of have to do some exposition dumps here and there. You know, if you want to properly set up the world, the background, the characters, and the kind of like move it forward, we kind of have to know like, okay, where are we? Who are these people? What's happening? Like here in this moment, I recognize that and I understand that, but this one kind of, it does kind of go into like info dump, you know, from here and there. It's not all the time. It's not throughout the book. It's just here and there. And I totally get it. I understand. I kind of sympathize with it though. But all right, come on, you know, all right, come on, let's go. I'm here. I'm with you. I'm getting it. Let's kind of go. The other thing would be there were no kind of likable characters to me in this. Like everybody, and I sympathize with Ayana. I actually do sympathize with her, honestly, but there's just no there's just no characters that I kind of gelled with, I guess. There was nobody that I was kind of like on their side with, you know. Even though it's, again, I sympathize with Ayana, she's thrown into this thing, but she, it's not like she comes out of it like the better person. She kind of just, I the way I read it, she kind of just adapted and started like going with like how everything was, especially like with the slaves. I think she, now okay, this is the first book of the trilogy, so maybe like with the enslaved deities in here, maybe she's going to try to work with them or work towards them. But in the book, she kind of started playing the game, basically started pitting them with other characters and stuff. And so I was just like, yeah, okay, that's redeeming characters in this to me. But again, it's the first novel in the trilogy. So I'm going to kind of half take that back until I finish the other two books. I really like the book. I am going to start reading her other ones too. So I can't wait to get into When Is Black Future Month, and also The Cities We Became. And also, she has a comic book series that I am going to review next week called Far Sector. It came out, I think, back in 2020. I think it's like a very contained run on DC Comics. It's dealing with a character that's a Green Lantern. And it was actually really, really damn good. I am definitely going to review that. She was the writer for that run on DC Comics. But yeah, okay, so for the score of this one, you know, I like the book. I think I could give it a 3 out of 5. I like it. I would recommend it. If you're into fantasy at all, or if you're looking for like black fantasy, or, you know, black authors who are writing fantasy, I definitely would like recommend it. I kind of feel like a jerk for giving it a 3, but I will say this is the first book. I am definitely going to read the other two in the trilogy. And it probably would. And I think I will kind of revisit this. I probably will like the book probably a little bit more after reading the other two. I feel comfortable giving it a 3 out of 5. She's one of my favorite authors, though, by the way. So I feel like a jerk, but I don't know. 3 out of 5 seems fair. Go ahead and get into our first video review. This is The Legend of Vox Machina. Is a 12 episode animated fantasy series currently streaming on Amazon Prime. It's a show about a band of dysfunctional characters going on adventures with that, and they eventually get tasked with slaying an encroaching evil that threatens the lands, and, you know, winds up getting into a bunch of different like wacky and kind of risque adventures along the way. So first off, this is based off of characters from a Critical Role. So I had not heard of Critical Role before this show. And so it was pretty interesting kind of like just researching them and, you know, diving into who they are. And apparently this Critical Role was started by a bunch of like voice actors or just actors like in Hollywood that had a D&D game that was going on for like years. And I think the Critical Role thing started back in 2012, but it's probably been going on with them between them for years. And so they were able to take, you know, that game and, you know, like post it up on, like, they have a podcast on it, and they have, like, you know, they put the podcast on YouTube, and so you can kind of watch them go through the adventures, and you can like listen to their campaigns on podcasts. I kind of respect the hell out of it. Yeah, and so like researching who they are, there was a couple of names that stood out to me, that just jumped out to me. And if you play video games, that like you'll recognize these names too. Laura Bailey and Ashley Johnson. Ashley Johnson, probably like really famous for voicing Ellie in the first Last of Us game. And Laura Bailey is famous for being in every damn thing. she's been in every video game and had a part in every cartoon that's been out in the past like 10, 15 years, it seems like. Of course, they were able to like pretty much get this off the ground because they are actors and, you know, they have connects in the industry, of course. Like, that, I believe all of that is based in LA, so it's, I'm pretty sure it's pretty easy for them to kind of get this thing off the ground. But so in the actual show, though, they have like a bunch of like special guest voices who just come in just to play like a bit part for like an episode or two, you know, and it's really cool like who they dragged in here. You probably will recognize like a bunch of names when I read them off if you're into like, you know, movies, TV shows and all that. People who have voices in here is Steven Root, Gina Torres, Kelly Hu, Dominic Monaghan, Tony Hale, Cree Summer, my girl, Logic. Yes, the rapper. The rapper Logic had a voice in here. Had like a, he was voicing like a random guard or something like that. And David Tennant played General Krieg. You cannot like not hear his voice. And like that's, wait, hold on. That's David Tennant, isn't it? Because he does his Scottish accent, and his Scottish accent is just legendary. You know, he's doing Scrooge McDuck and DuckTales now. But before even before all that, he's my second favorite Doctor Who character. If I think if you listened or watched last week, you probably know who my favorite Doctor Who character is. Yeah, Matt Smith. I love Matt Smith. Like my absolute favorite Doctor Who character. I'm getting a migraine. I gotta put my gimmicks on. Well, not a migraine. I'm getting flashes or whatever. Yeah, and so all the guys in Critical Role. So these characters are based off of the campaign that they've been doing in their D&D game. So all of those guys are voicing, because they're voice actors, right? So I mean, duh, you know. But so all of them are kind of voicing the characters here in the show. And so okay, so all right, let's get back into like the show actually. And so this has been going on since 2012 apparently, like their game or their campaign. I kind of couldn't tell because I was able to jump right into the show, you know, just follow the characters from I guess this point on. Yeah, I'm not sure if this is like if the show is the very first campaign that they played out already, and so they're, you know, just turning that into like an animated series and they're going from there, or if this is a campaign that they're just kind of doing for the show. I would imagine that it's probably based on the campaigns that they're already doing, and so they're just kind of transferring it over into like the animated show or into like a different medium. But all right, so who are these, who is Vox Machina? They are pretty much a typical you know, fantasy characters. You know, there is Kayleth, who is the elf with the elf with the antlers and the staff. Percival Dirola, he's kind of like a regular human kind of gunslinger. He's the guy on the end with the glasses and the pea shooter over there. Pike Trickfoot is a healer. The one kind of on the end here, she's kind of like the little person with the blonde hair. She's the healer. She used like healing magic or like white magic. Scanlan Shortholt, he's the bard here, like right at the front with the loot. You know, he got that character. Grog is the giant tank of a character. You know, you see him with the battle axe here. He kind of reminds me of Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy in a lot of ways. Like he's like a shade of green. He's got the body markings, like the face paint, and he's kind of like this very kind of flat and like, you know, non-ironic humor, you know, with him. Yeah, very. And the way he delivers it too, like the way his voice actor delivers it is very kind of like deadpan and kind of flat, and it's just everything reminds me of Drax, honestly. And then on the opposite end here are two elf siblings, who are Vaxildon and Vaxalia. So yeah, so what do I like about it? The animation is pretty good. It's really smooth. It's you can tell Amazon put a lot of production into this. They didn't skim on anything. Like, yeah, it's everything kind of like pops off of the screen, like the body parts and animation and stuff like that is appropriately gruesome. On that note, this is a very adult show. This is like a very, very kind of adult show. Yeah, put the kiddies to bed before watching this. You know, there's blood and there's boobs. So, you know, just forewarned, you've been warned. And the story in this, the story is really good, actually. I got really into it. You know, it started off as kind of like a kind of an intro thing, and they battle a dragon in here first off, but it's very much like the kickoff to kind of show like the characters, like what their powers are, and that, you know, to kind of build up like what kind of banter they have between each other. It was a really good kickoff, and then from there you kind of like they get ushered off into like what the true story is, or you know, the true adventure that they get kind of enrolled into from the emperor, I guess you can call him in here. So I just kind of watched this because it looked like a fantasy show, and I was looking for like something fantasy to kind of watch in the review. Had not heard about a Critical Role at all. Didn't know it was like an actual D&D game, but like just watching the show, I was just sitting there like, man, you know, this guy has the feel of like a bunch of like bros kind of sitting around like doing like a D&D adventure. And like just to find out like that's exactly what this is was a trip. It was like, oh, it just kind of read like that to me, or just kind of played out like a D&D kind of adventure to me. And I think it was more like the kind of crass and juvenile humor and jokes and stuff like that. It's just kind of like, you know, this kind of feels like a bunch of like just dudes, you know, playing a game, like kicking back a couple as they like go through their D&D read for the week or for the month or whatever, you know what I mean. What I don't like about it, well, okay, as I was just mentioning, like the humor in it, and it's, I don't know, man, it's just, it was so juvenile and just really kind of crass, you know. It was and I'm not a prude guy. I'm not like, oh god, or nothing like that, you know. It's just, it was just, I don't know, man. It's just, that was the one aspect that kind of didn't like gel with me for some reason. It was just, it seemed so like high schoolish. I think I'm just because I'm getting old, I think. But I don't, it was just one of the things. It was just like, okay, we can probably do without that. But it was mainly probably because of that, the Scanlan guy, that the dude in the front with the loot. Like, oh my god, like that guy was, he was just annoying. He was really annoying. I could have done without that character in the show, honestly. And I don't know. So, like, this is like a whole fan base behind this. So, he's probably like the most famous or popular character in the whole like Critical Role thing. I don't know. But it was just for me, god, like this guy. But he was funny. There was some parts of it where I was like, okay, that was pretty funny. That was kind of pretty funny. But for the overall, it was just like, this guy, oh my lord. And the only other thing was like Pike, the healer in this. She was basically like the get out of death free card. Like, she, at the beginning, it was just kind of like, okay, does she have a limit? Because like somebody could be mortally wounded and she'd be like, okay, don't worry, I got it. Yeah, okay, I got this, don't worry about it. And it's like, wow, really? So it's just, it's you just bring anybody back. She can heal anything, apparently. I did think it was pretty cool because they did address that at a certain point in the show where she couldn't do her powers anymore. And so, you know, there was a point where the crew had to go on this kind of other adventure. And she kind of held back and was just like, you know what, I'm not going to be able to contribute anything if I don't figure out why, like, my powers aren't working anymore. And so, you know, we kind of trailed off onto her own kind of like side story. And it was pretty cool. It was all right. It didn't really explain where her powers came from. Or maybe I missed it. I could have missed it, you know. But yeah, it still didn't kind of explain why she is kind of like God mode. You know, she's like walking God mode in a video game, kind of. But yeah, I mean, that's, and those were like kind of like the only two kind of like nitpicks I could have for this show. Really good show overall. I really, really enjoyed it. I can't wait for the next season to come out, and I'm gonna start checking out like Critical Role. I was like watching a couple of videos just kind of like, getting ready for the review. And yeah, I'm going to subscribe to the pod, and I'm going to start, you know, watching their video. The only thing is they have like 4-hour episodes. Do they have the clip notes? You know, hopefully they have the clip notes. But I'm happy I kind of stumbled onto the Critical Role part of it. I'm happy to have an anime too, and I'm a fan. I'm going to start checking them out. As for a rating, yeah, this is a 4 out of 5 for me. Like, I can't wait for the second season. I can't wait to start listening to like Critical Role on the way to work and things like that. And yeah, it was pretty solid show. I really enjoyed it. 4 out of 5. Fantasy adventure that came out back in 1988. It is starring Warwick Davis and Val Kilmer, and it is directed by Ron Howard. Actually, I had no clue until like researching that. So this is one of my absolute favorite movies. This is one of the movies that I saw when I was a kid, and it kind of made me fall in love with the genre, because I remember just seeing this and seeing like how kind of new and different and weird it was from anything else I had seen. Up until that point, I think I was like, I won't say like 8 or 9 or something like that, you know. But I remember seeing this, and I was intrigued by it, and you know, I started looking for, okay, what else can I watch that's like, you know, like this, like, you know, that probably is the point where I found out that yeah, I really like fantasy. Okay, so what is Willow about? So there is a prophesized baby that is dropped off in the village of Little People that is discovered by a Willow, played by Warwick Davis, who is a husband and a father in the village. You know, so in discovering the baby, you know, a bunch of kind of mutant dogs kind of attack the village, and they put 2 and 2 together and kind of figure out that they got to get rid of the baby. He then embarks on a dangerous adventure because the evil queen is sending out a people and creatures to kind of look for the baby, find a way to get the baby to safety, and while avoiding the queen and her army. So yeah, what I like about this, very much Warwick Davis. I really enjoy his performance in this, and he's a fantastic actor. Anyway, he's played in a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, no. So Warwick Davis is definitely my favorite part of this movie, or one of the things I love about the movie. He's a fantastic actor. He's had a lot of parts, just like bit parts of movies. Playing a lot of like sci-fi and fantasy type of characters where you can be like a little person or like a person dressed up in a costume or something like that. And he is the guy who plays the leprechaun in all those like crazy leprechaun horror movies from the 90s. Guilty pleasure, I'll admit it. Okay, at least the first two. But Leprechaun in the Hood? Yeah. Yeah, that's all me. But Warwick Davis is really good in this too. He's acting his ass off in this too. You could tell he's giving it his all, and he definitely shines in this. And so they're doing a series on Disney Plus, which is going to come out in like a couple of months now. Actually, I think like around November 30th, I believe they said. I did a reaction to that, the announced trailer that they did back on like Disney Day. Yes, I mean, the video's up on YouTube at some point, or it will be. But so yeah, Warwick Davis in this is really good. The story is a pretty cool story. There's a lot of like, you know, really kind of fantastical magic and stuff like that. And yeah, it's everything kind of blends together. And there's a couple of actors in here that once watching it again, because I hadn't seen this movie probably since 90 something, maybe 80 something. Like it's probably been that long, but like it's struck a chord with me so much. Like a lot of it's kind of stayed in my head all this time. I had no idea there was a couple of actors in here. Kevin Pollak, who is in here. So he plays one of the, he's like a fairy or something like that. And I had no, so I'm watching a movie and I'm sitting there like, wait, is that? No. Oh my God, that's Kevin Pollak. I had no idea he was in this. And it was really awesome to see him like in this and playing that role. It's crazy. Like, and it's, I mean, if you go back long enough into any like actor's, you know, resume, you'll see them in like stuff that you probably had seen, but you forgot they were in that. Like, wait, he was in that? Like, no way. How did I not see that before? So, and like, I did not know Tony Cox is in this as well. I had no idea until watching it again. And it was another one that was like, wait a minute, is that? Oh, that's the guy. That's my man. So I think most people will remember him from Bad Santa. Yeah, a lot of people will remember him from Bad Santa. And he was incredible in Bad Santa. Like, that's a really good movie. That's one of the things you watch, like, every Christmas, right? But for me, his favorite role, personally for me, will always be in Friday. Mr. Parker. When Mr. Parker, like, showed up with when Bernie Mac was in there with Miss Parker. Hey, Miss Parker. and he, like, shows up. Oh, I love that movie. That Friday's another like all-time favorite of mine too. I love that movie. I watch that at least once a year. Yeah, and Val Kilmer is in this too. Like this is kind of Val Kilmer's movie actually. You know, once he kind of shows up in it, he kind of takes the reins and yeah, it's his movie pretty much. He's so like charismatic. He's so likable. And, you know, he's swashbuckling. He's like all of that, like the sword play, all of that. You know, he's such a likable and believable character in this world as like kind of, I don't know, kind of like what do you call those? A vagabond. He's kind of a vagabond in this and he plays it to the T. This is one of the first movies I remember seeing him in. And so this was that movie whenever I see him, like, you know, after that, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's the guy from Willow. I was a kid when it came out. So, you know, I didn't know movies all that much. You know, I'm so happy he got over his kind of his health issues. And you know, hopefully, you know, he'll get well enough to where he can start acting again. One of my favorite actors, like absolutely one of my favorite actors, Tombstone, which is another absolute favorite of mine. Doc Holliday. Come on. Like, yeah, I love Val Kilmer and I'm really happy he got over his health issues. I can't wait for him to like, you know, start, you know, getting well enough to act again. Yeah, man. Val Kilmer and Tombstone. Like, I'm your Huckleberry. Well, John Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave. Love that movie. God, I love that movie. All right, I'm getting off track. Where am I? All right. I actually really love this movie. There's not that much I don't like, honestly. If I can nitpick one thing, it would probably be so in the beginning of the movie when the dogs come into the village where a Willow is. And though the dogs are kind of like going through the village, they're like terrorizing everything and tearing everything up. And so the dogs are wearing, they're dogs. They're like actual dogs in the movie, but they put like these costumes on them to make them look like some like creatures or whatever. And you could totally tell like when one of the dogs is running. And it's a quick cut, like, I think because, you know, Ron Howard is an excellent director. And I think he saw this. And so it was like a quick cut, right? You could totally see like one of the rubber suits just like kind of like bouncing along as the dog was running. You know, it's just a chuckle. Like, I can't even really like, I'm just nitpicking because there's nothing I really don't like about this movie. Honestly, I love it. Since it's been on the Disney Plus app, yeah, I watched this a couple of times. Like, yeah, my rating, come on, you know what it's going to be. 5 out of 5. Excellent. Yeah, nostalgia glasses, of course. Yes. I don't care. And I don't care. No, I absolutely love this. Yeah, I can't wait for the new series to come out on Disney Plus. I'm going to be right there. And especially since Warwick Davis is going to be in the new series, man. So yeah, Willow, 1988. And so there we have it, lords and ladies. Another episode in the books. Come to the bar, at the pub, have a lager and kick back. Okay, I'm done. I'm finished. Well, yeah, thank you for checking me out as we go through the fantasy week here in MacBooks Weekly. This is episode 4. I've been doing this for a month so far, and yeah, I've got some decent feedback. Nothing crazy yet. I'm looking out for it. Nothing crazy. No crazy hate stuff yet. But nah, it's been interesting. It's been fun doing this. You know, stop by the YouTube channel and you know, to see the video or the reviews I'm doing live on video. And you know, stop by, subscribe, and like. You know, help the channel grow there. And also, once again, you know, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Amazon Music. What am I leaving out? Google Podcasts. We are pretty much everywhere that you can find a podcast. You can find us there. Just look up Maniacal Books, and boom, there you go. The moon with them purple cursive letters. That's be me. So yeah. Nope. Thank you for checking me out. I am signing off, and I will see you next week. Peace.